Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
What's up, everybody? It's Owen. Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. It is Wednesday, November 6th, and we're going to get to our podcast conversation in a moment with Nick Wynn. And before we do, I want to remind you that you can find this podcast along with thousands and thousands of others on Stitcher. It's a really cool app for your smartphone, and the Fansmanship podcast is there, so I'm going to recommend that you go ahead and download that and put us on one of your stations there. You can also find our podcast on iTunes and on our website at fansmanship.com. Our conversation today was with my conversation today was with Nick Wynn. Nick is aka Musty on the Cal Poly message boards. He is one of the more mellow message board posters, and I thought it was time that we had a fan on the podcast, not just somebody who's kind of entrenched, but that we had a fan, and Nick is definitely that. I talked with Nick about the Cal Poly football and basketball teams. We discussed some analytics that we're able to look at, especially in basketball, for how well a player is performing. I think a lot like baseball analytics have in the past few years, with numbers like OPS and other numbers like WAR being thrown around. I think basketball is a sport that will also soon have other stats besides things like points and rebounds per game that matter. So who is it? It's Nick Wynn on the Fansmanship.com podcast. Hope you enjoy it. I'm here with Nick Wynn. Nick from who I originally met with or on the Cal Poly message boards, and he's somebody who impressed me with his levity, which isn't always the case on things like message boards, and with his knowledge of things like advanced stats for basketball and football and other things that that are out there. Nick, how's it going?
Pretty good. How's it going with you?
It's going great. You're a Cal Poly alumni, right?
I am.
Or alumnus, I guess. One person can't be alumni, I guess, right?
Yes, that's right. I'm one of the people that took 5 years to get my degree at Cal Poly. So I'm Cal Poly 03 in the great school of the College of Liberal Arts, and a history major that I don't use.
That sounds... That sounds probably like a lot of people with history majors. I think Luke Johnson, who's a Fansmanship guy, was a history major at Cal Poly as well. Maybe right around a similar time. You guys might have run into each other in history classes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. I think you graduated maybe 05 or something like that. But what I see you post about a lot, and I'll kind of cut right to it, is things like advanced stats, and we'll get to some of those in a little bit, because I am interested in knowing a little bit more about it. The world of advanced stats has kind of allowed people to look at, for instance, a sport like baseball in a little bit different light, thinking about how good a player is not necessarily just based on their batting average or how many RBIs they have, or even necessarily how many home runs they hit, but has kind of allowed fans to really figure out a value of a guy like a Jacoby Ellsbury this year versus a guy who might have had a similar amount of home runs and maybe even stolen bases, but who didn't hit nearly as many doubles and triples or something. And it has allowed fans now, I mean, first it was teams and stat geeks, but now kind of I think it's mainstreamed, but I don't think the other sports are. And so it's something I want to talk with you about in a second. First, though, I want to talk to you about Cal Poly and some of the sports that are going on right now, because I know you follow football and men's basketball especially closely. Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So this football team this year has gone, what's their record now? Is it 4-5 or 4-?
Yeah, I believe 4-5.
4-5, and two of their losses are against FBS teams. One of their losses is against Yale, and two of their losses is against a top 10 and a top 20 team. along the way. How close have they been to really being like a real like top 10 or 15 team themselves?
Well, I think they probably are closer than what you would think, just because of the margin of victory. You know, the FBS games are so tough, where you really, as an FCS school, you really need to have some breaks go for you to win those games.
Definitely.
And usually you need to play an FBS team that's struggling or dealing with injuries. You know, when they beat Wyoming last year, Wyoming's starting quarterback was out, and it was a team that was kind of mired in a slump. So the FBS games, I don't worry so much about. The two, as you said, the two FCS losses that they had in the Big Sky were the two teams that were really good. I mean, Montana, to win in Montana is extremely difficult. And
they win like 9 out of 10 games in their stadium, which is just stupid. It's not quite that much, but I think it's like 85% or something silly.
I've been there. I've been lucky enough to be in Missoula, and it is as loud a stadium as you will come across in college football. So it's a very tough place to play. That's a very good team. Northern Arizona obviously is a very good team too. They're probably going to go to the playoffs. I think the thing is that Cal Poly is probably what I would call a good team. They're a good team. And I think, they're probably going to end up at 6-6. They may end up at 5-7. But to go 6-6 against the schedule that they played, that's decent. Is it what the fans were hoping for at the beginning of the year? No, probably not. You know, everyone was kind of hoping for a playoff appearance, maybe another, shot at a Big Sky championship, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a disaster of a season if they were to finish 5-7 or even 6-6. But it's kind of meh. You know what I mean? It's kind of an average.
Yeah. It seemed to me like a real missed opportunity, I guess, is how I would put it. And a missed opportunity because you have so many guys who are seniors, who are experienced players, who are really talented at positions that aren't quarterback and that aren't running back and that aren't special teams necessarily. And those guys, the Sullivan Groses of the world, Johnny Millard, Alex Hubbard, Willie Tucker may or may not get another season. Some of these players, Leffy, Latuyasanoa, was that right? I think I said it right. Players like that. And Leffy looks like he's coming back, actually, per JD's article today. He doesn't actually have a torn up knee. It's more of just a bruise. So he might actually make it back this week. But the point being that they have a lot of seniors and a lot of really great players who are playing really great, who are playing I would say, you have individuals who are playing at a championship level, or even units that are playing at a championship level. I think their defense is as good as any, maybe in the country, for sure in the Big Sky. They've given up something around 15 points a game their last five games. They give up a lot of field goals, but no hardly any touchdowns. You've had a team whose offense and special teams has really just kind of, for lack of a better way to say it, kind of been the difference between.
Yeah, it's let them down. Absolutely.
I mean, they're realistically a field goal, a blocked field goal, and a missed. Yeah, was it missed or blocked? Blocked field goal in Montana, and a kickoff return for a touchdown against Northern Arizona, away from being instead of 4-5, from being what, 6-3. And being probably a top 20, top 15 team in the country, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And it's little things like that kind of change the thing. I think the tough thing is that even last year when they went to the playoffs, the defense was probably only average.
Right.
It kind of took some time to gel together, and I think this year the defense has finally kind of come together and played really well, played up to their ability. And the tough part is that obviously this year, now as the defense is starting to come on strong, the offense, through injury and through, Andre Gross graduating and that kind of thing, the offense has taken a step back. So it's one of those things where it's really tough to time those peaks on both sides.
Right.
It looks like they may have just missed it on this side. But, with the recruiting that Tim Walsh and his staff have done, I'm not despairing for the team in future years, but it does seem like one of those things, like you said, a missed opportunity where they just didn't hit the peak on both sides of the ball at the same time.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I definitely agree, and that's why I kind of feel like this season's just so frustrating probably for so many fans in that,
sure.
Like you said, they've played so well at times. You know, the offense looks so efficient at times, you know, with one quarterback or the other. I mean, you can kind of see why Tim Walsh went with Vince Moraga out of the gate, given, you know, Dano and Chris Brown's, you know, performances. They've been up and down, I think, and the way, you know, you look at Moraga is maybe his ups weren't as up as Chris Brown. I don't know that he was ever going to rush for 190 or 200 yards in a game, but he also wasn't probably, you know, wouldn't have played as poorly as Brown played against Yale, for instance, either. So, you know, definitely kind of moderating those ups and downs. It's so interesting, too. I wanted to quickly say before we move on, I think it's really interesting how the defense, while not really the traditional, you know, Cal Poly in the mid-2000s was known for their blitzing defense, their linebackers who sacked the quarterback a million times. And this defense is the exact opposite, although maybe just as effective, right?
Yeah, and it's definitely a stylistic thing. That, you know, right. Rich Ellerston's style dating back to his time in Arizona was a lot of pressure and a lot of kind of downfield running from the defense. And Tim Walsh is kind of more of that bend don't break kind of style of defense. And this really, like you said, this defense that he's had this year has really been the kind of the epitome of that philosophy.
Yeah, I mean, you have defensive linemen and linebackers who are just studs all over the field, yeah. And I've been just really impressed watching that whole unit. And I think instead of despairing, I've kind of chosen as a fan, and we're all fans here, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on. You know, as somebody who's a fan of the game and a fan of the team, I think it's probably a worthwhile thing to take some happiness out of the fact that this defense is so good. If the defense wasn't that good, you know, this team wouldn't be a close 4-5. They might be a 3-6, you know, not even sniffing anything. So,
absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it's been a good year for the defense. And I think, you know, I don't know how they're going to stop Eastern Washington, but if this defense puts up some kind of a good game against Eastern Washington in a couple of weeks, obviously they have to face Sacramento State at home this week, but if they can put together three straight games, and especially these next two at home that are good performances, I think they really have a chance to cement themselves as probably one of the better defenses in the last 10 years that this program has had. Unfortunately, it comes in a season that they just kind of couldn't put everything together all at once.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's move on, because I always get excited about kind of the next sport, and I think it's the beauty of college sports is that we get to understand that teams change every year, and there's a cyclical nature to it, and the unknown is always there, because when you're dealing with 18 to 22 year olds, you're dealing with guys who have the potential to improve a lot from one year to the other. In maybe the NBA or something like that, you might not see that kind of maturity and improvement on that high a level every year. You know, you kind of know what you're going to get out of player X or player Y, generally speaking. In college, you never really know. You know, you never know if for instance, you know, Malik Love went and worked on his jump shooting and went from a 25% 3-point shooter to a 35% 3-point shooter or something like that.
Sure.
What do you think what do you think about this year's roster team coming back for Joe Calero and the Cal Poly team, as somebody who keeps track of them pretty closely? What are your feelings about this year's group of Mustangs?
You know, it's really, I really feel like they're still going to play kind of that similar style of Cal Poly basketball that we're used to. You know, I still think it's going to be methodical, and I still think they're going to run their sets, and they're going to really emphasize a half court on both sides of the ball, both, you know, half court defense and running the half court offense. But really, I think this year's team is going to be a lot more athletic than last year's team. I think if they do want to push the ball, and I'm not saying they're all of a sudden going to be one of the fastest teams in the country, but if they do want to push the ball, I think it's something that fail to be able to do with the athletes that they have on the team. I think they're going to be a little bit better defensively because of the athleticism that they're having. So I still think it's going to be a very much a Cal Poly team, but I do think that the difference between last year's team and this year's team is going to be more athletic and maybe less kind of systematic, essentially.
Got it. So you're picturing maybe a little bit more of an opened up kind of a game. I think it's really interesting. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago the team went to was it Costa Rica ahead of the season, and there was a lot of talk. I think it was before Amari Furman's senior year. There was a lot of talk that maybe they're going to do a little bit of pressing, a little bit of running, something a little bit different. But when the season came, it wasn't really the case that they could actually do that.
I think that something to do, you know, has a lot to do with the talent. I mean, and look, Dylan Royer surpassed all expectations that I think anyone had for him, and was a very good college player.
Yeah,
Chris O'Brien was a really great player for the. Unfortunately, he was injured quite a bit, but for when he was healthy, he was a very good player. Drake UU was a real good player, but I think the guys that they're bringing in, the two junior college transfers, David Nwaba and Michael Bolden. And obviously getting Malik Love back, I think they're going to be a little bit more athletic. You know, Dylan Royer got a lot better defensively over his career, a lot better than I thought he could be.
But he wasn't the defensive player of the year.
Exactly. And it was probably still a bit of a struggle for him.
Yeah, sure.
The guys that replaced him
are looking really good. You know, I think one thing that's going to maybe hurt them is kind of the savvy, good kind of hard-nosed play of Reese Morgan. He's out for the season, but you still look at this roster and you're talking about three guard positions that are going to be filled by probably one of five or three out of these five players. You got Jamal Johnson, Malik Love, Kyle Otister, David Waba, and Michael Bolden. I agree with you about Waba and Bolden. Those are guys who were both in the dunk contest a few weeks ago that I took some pictures of, and you can find the pictures up on fansmanship.com. But I think it's going to be really interesting to see, because freshmen in Joe Calero's defensive system anyway, if they're wing players or post players, sometimes have a hard time, especially in crunch time kind of defensive situations. You saw last year where Brian Bennett was on the bench kind of towards the end and towards the end of the games in the Big West tournament. And even though Cal Poly, you know, ended up losing on a rebound tip, tip out to a player at the last minute. You had the seniors on the floor, which is what Joe Calero really wanted to roll with, is guys who he could count on making the right defensive play and stopping the right things. I think it's going to be interesting to see how much a guy like Waba, who's technically a sophomore this year, a guy like Bolden, who's a junior, but they're brand new to the program, how quickly they get indoctrinated into that defensive style. Because I think it takes guys a while sometimes to figure out the fact that, you know, hey, this is how I need to play defense. And I think in the preseason before Big West play, I think you're going to see a lot of subbing in and out. You're going to figure, you know, Joe Calero is going to figure out who the guys are that he can count on to play, especially defense, the right way. Because like you said, I think all those guys have some offensive skills, whether it's getting to the rim, whether it's cleaning up misses. Calero talked about Waba, especially as being, you know, the most athletic guy since Sean Lewis at Mott Gym. And I think that's a really exciting thing. I think a lot of the way that their season swings and how deep they're able to be and how much pressure they can play with defensively has to do with, can they play nine guys? I mean, you're talking about those five on the wing, you know, at the point and at the wing, and then Eversley, Gordon, Bennett, and Awich down low. And now you have nine guys who you feel pretty comfortable with, maybe as a fan, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I do think that, you know, obviously, like you said, that it's going to take some time to learn the system, because you know Joe's very systematic in his defense, and he likes to throw a lot of different kinds of defenses, zones, and presses, and man-to-man at teams. But I do think that having that extra length is going to help. I do think that Pauly's main struggle defensively last year was that they gave up a lot of baskets close to the rim. They didn't do a great job of protecting the rim. Brian Bennett had some blocks, but other than that, there wasn't really a lot of interior defending. And so Wob is going to help with that a lot. I think as Joel Avich gets another year under his belt, he's going to help internally. And I think, too, that if you have those perimeter defenders that can keep guys in front of them, that's going to cut down a lot on opportunities close to the rim as well. And that's something you're hoping for with those guards, with Bolden and with Malik Love and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so, I mean, Bolden's listed at 6'5", but he's super long. Wob is listed at, let's check, 6'4". With Awich playing well, too, at the end of last year, I mean, you have a little bit of height to be able to try to match up with a team like Irvine or Hawaii, who sports like each of them has like seven players, 6'7" or over. You can match up with some of those teams as well if you put Eversley or Awich at the three as well, if that's the way
you want to play. Yeah, I think that's an important thing with this roster is that he's got a lot of options in terms of he can go big with Eversley at the three and put, Zach Gordon or Awich in there with Bennett, and he can go small. He can play Eversley at the four like he likes and play Audister, one of the freshmen, or Bolden. So there's definitely some options for him in terms of different athletes that he maybe didn't have last year, which should help defensively, would hope.
Got it. Yeah, absolutely. Before we get into analytics or getting into kind of nerd talk here, who's your favorite other team in the Big West Conference to watch besides Cal Poly? So when Cal Poly plays Team X, like, you really enjoy watching that game?
What's tough for me was that the team I really enjoyed watching was Pacific, and obviously Pacific is no longer in the conference. I really just admired Bob Thomason's coaching style, and I thought that, Pacific, you could, no matter what kind of talent they had, they were going to compete in and out, and they played a system that allowed them to compete no matter what kind of talent they had. And then if they had talent like they did last year, going back a few years back with Christian Marroquin and those kinds of guys, they could be really good. So I'm going to miss watching them.
Thomason seems like kind of brethren with Joe Calero in that way, in that his guys have roles. It's one of the things that I really enjoyed, I think 4 or 5 years ago when I think I came in the year before Calero got here, I went to a couple games. And then the year after, his first year, it was just so clear with a lot of the same players how much more comfortable they were because they understood the role that they had on the court, and not necessarily a point guard or a two guard kind of a role, but what their specific things that they were expected to do were. And probably Thomason had similar things for his players in that way, where you could tell his players were comfortable and they were put in positions where they could be successful.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And his teams, he built his teams to go after whatever he felt like the weakness of the other team was. And I think Paulie does a lot of that. I think Joe Calero does a lot of that too, where if he knows that a team has a tough time, defending the perimeter, he's going to put a lot of guys out there that can shoot from the perimeter. If he knows that a team has a tough time getting up and down the court, he's going to try and push the pace.
Right.
So I really enjoyed watching him. I think Bob Williams is kind of similar at UCSD, where he can definitely kind of mix and match to where he feels like the strength of his team is and where, the other team, where he can take advantage of from the other team. It's fun to watch teams that play kind of a different style. Someone like Fullerton, who does like to get up and down the court, or Northridge. I don't know how much Northridge is going to do that now with the coaching change, but, that's always kind of fun to see a different style. So, the thing with the Big West is obviously it's mid-major or low-major basketball, but, man, it's competitive. There's nothing better than a Saturday night at the Big West. You never know, what's going to happen. And it's not, other conferences like the West Coast Conference, you kind of know who the best teams are, and you kind of know who the bottom teams are, and the middle kind of where teams can make their mark. But in the Big West, it legitimately any team can win on any given night. So that's what's always so fun about following the conference.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have a talent level, I think, that every team has physically, and it becomes really a mental kind of game back and forth sometimes between coaches, and that's been talked about too over the past few years. Did you know that Joe Calero is the third highest tenured coach? I was writing a Big West preview today that'll be out probably Friday before the Arizona game. Calero's the third most tenured Big West coach now, behind Bob Williams and Dan Munson. 5 years.
Yeah, that's, I mean, how insane is that, really? When he hasn't even really been at Pauly that long, but it's just, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, some schools have lost coaches due to retirement. Some schools have lost coaches because they weren't very good. And I think it's one of those things, too, where, you know, California, for as much as the Big West may be a mid-major, kind of low-major place, I mean, it's, as a coach, it's a nice place to come out to California. It's a great place
Definitely.
To recruit to. It's one of those things where I think if you're an administrator and you have a coach who may not be cutting it, you're going to have some people interested in your position. So,
yep. So let's get into some of the nerd stuff, I guess. I feel like after baseball, basketball is kind of the next frontier. I mean, football has stats, but there aren't any really stats, and maybe there are now, but, you know, quarterback rating was kind of the first, like, random stat that you ever heard, even before baseball ones, I feel like. And there are stats in football, and we can talk about them sometime, but one of the things that I was really interested in last year was you talking about Jamal Johnson, especially, and was it a stat called, like, true field goal percentage or something like that, or...
There's two different things. There's effective field goal percentage, which is essentially, it just gives you the extra, it's essentially what every shot would be if it was for 2 points. So yeah, if you think about it, if you're a three-point shooter and you make one out of every three-pointers that you take, the points that you're putting on the board is the exact same points as a player who is making one out of every two-pointers that they make. So because, you know, a three-pointer, you know, because you get that extra bonus, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to combine three-pointers and two-pointers into one, like, field goal percentage, because those shots they're not worth as much,
obviously,
right?
Okay, okay,
uh-huh. So in effect, the field goal percentage essentially just gives you the bonus for making that three-pointer. So it's really simple. You basically just, for every three-pointer that a player or a team makes, they get essentially one extra, you know, point or one extra number in the numerator, and you just divide that by field goal percentage. So essentially, it's the field goal percentage a player would have if he just shot 2 points, essentially.
Right. So it's kind of it's a measure of efficiency. And interestingly enough, as I was looking at the Big West, there were multiple players, including Ryan Sipkins at Davis, who shot higher field goal percentages overall from 3-point range than 2-point range.
Absolutely.
Which is, I think
he was
like a 46%er, the player whose name I just said, who I want to say Michael Bryson, Sipkins. Yeah. He was like a 46%er from downtown and like a 42%er from 2-point range. Which kind of tells you clearly how you want to guard the guy, but also is kind of an amazing stat that you do have some really talented offensive shooters in this league. The stat that you said wasn't the one I was thinking of. The one that I was thinking of is the one that measures how many possessions end with that player.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And I think we talked about this with Jamal Johnson. So basically, you know, the essential thing, you know, when it comes to these kinds of new wave, dorky, advanced basketball statistics, is it's all based on possessions, because we're talking about, you know, trying to eliminate the whole pace aspect from the game. You know, the slower teams like Cal Poly are going to give their guys less of a chance to score, to end possessions, and teams like get up and down the court.
Right. So just as an example, Chris Eversley averaged, I think, 15 or 16 points a game last year. But if you're looking at it on a points per possession situation, he might have averaged 18 at Long Beach or somewhere.
If they would have had the same system that got up and down the court, he would have obviously scored many more points.
Right. Okay.
So
good.
It's not really fair to judge to say, oh well, so and so scored, you know, 18 points a game, and Chris Eversley scored 15 points a game, so he must be a better offensive player. That doesn't really tell you that much. It doesn't tell you, you know, it doesn't get down to the nuts and bolts. So like we were talking about with baseball, where, you know, the RBI is kind of dependent on your other teammates, and points per game is kind of dependent on how quickly your team is playing. So I think the thing we talked about with Jamal Johnson was we talk a lot about his turnover percentage.
Uh-huh.
And turnover percentage is a tough thing because it's based, you know, players that are going to have the ball in their hands more are going to turn the ball over more. That's obviously just common nature. So a player like Dylan Royer last only turned the ball over on possessions that he ended. So we're talking about any possession where Dylan Royer shot the ball and made a basket or shot the ball on another team, you know, the other team rebounded it, or he turned the ball over. Those possessions, only about 15% of them ended up being a turnover.
Right.
Jamal Johnson, it was like a little close to 23%. So higher, but Jamal Johnson was more, he did more things with the ball. He dribbled more and more dependent on creating offense. That number was a little bit higher for him at the beginning of the year, and it was much higher at the beginning of his career. For a point guard, you kind of want to see a point guard with a turnover percentage around the 20 mark, where he only one out of five possessions that he's ending are going to end on a turnover.
The other four, he's shooting them.
Yeah, he's shooting them. You know, whether he's making or missing it, but only, you know, at least if you're shooting it, you have the opportunity to make a basket, whereas a turnover never ends up.
And if you're a scoring point guard, which Jamal Johnson isn't or hasn't been, then your turnover percentage is going to go down naturally because you're taking more shots. Is that a fair thing to say, too?
Yeah, I'd say so. I'd say so. So, but he is still the primary ball handler.
Sure.
So I'm not expecting that he's going to have a turnover percentage that's going to be, you know, in the teens or that kind of.
But Casper Ware may have had like a 15% or something like that as well, even though he was the primary ball handler. Just maybe by virtue of him just shooting more as well.
Yeah, exactly. And he was, you know, he was obviously one of the better point guards in mid-major basketball.
Sure.
Get to the 15 range, that's excellent. Right. But even if Jamal could just get to below 20, it would be a big thing for Cal Poly. And I think, especially towards the end of last year, he was starting to kind of take better care of the ball.
Yeah. There was a point.
The big thing.
A point like early in conference play, I think, when he didn't start, when I think Odister and somebody else started instead of
Frank
Jamal. UU is the point of those other point guards. So UU started for like a few games, and I feel like that was a point when you could look at his turnover percentage before and after and understand, you know, kind of that was a turning point for him. I want to ask you another question about the Cal Poly guards, because I think if there's one question mark, it's not necessarily how well they can get to the rim. It's not how athletic they are. It's probably not even how well they play defense. It's more likely with the loss of Reese Morgan and the loss of Dylan Royer to being graduated, how are they going to be able to shoot the ball from the outside? Kyle Odister is still there, but Malik Love and Michael Bolden can stroke it, I think, yet to see. But Waba is not really a 3-point shooter necessarily. And between Malik Love and Jamal Johnson, you know, from what we've seen in the past, there's not a lot of reason to think that these guys are going to be lighting it up. They're probably going to be more along the lines of, you know, from a shooting perspective anyway, closer to like a Drake UU, maybe a little bit streaky. Maybe they'll take more in preseason than they will once conference play rolls around or something. But what evidence is there for you that maybe those guys are going to be able to be as effective as maybe a Royer or a or even something close to that, with making teams at least respect them from the outside? Because I think that's going to be something. If you have both of those guys on the floor, Love and Jamal Johnson, with Waba or something like that, those are three guys that if I'm a defensive player, I'm going to let those guys shoot, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think Waba, when in his last year at Santa Monica College, it was something. It was crazy. It was something like he only took 12 3-pointers the whole year, and
right?
At like 194 2-pointers. I mean, even though he's 6'5", he's legitimately a forward. He will not shoot. He's not going to be a guy that's going to be on the perimeter, you know, trying to get a 3-point shot off or that kind of thing.
Totally.
So, Bolden did shoot fairly well from 3-point range last year at JC. I think he was in the 36-37% range. Yeah. So he's a guy that I think, you know, if they need someone to shoot on the perimeter, he'll be out there. Odister wasn't as great last year from 3-point range as he had been. He shot like 37% from 3-point last year. He shot a little bit better in the years prior, but he's going to be kind of a guy that I think he's going to get some of those Dylan Royer attempts. But, you know, Cal Poly was a team last year that from 3-point range, like 33% of their points came from 3-point range. That was in like the top 15 in the country. they get a lot of points from three-point range. And obviously a lot of that was Dylan Weir. But a big chunk, like you said, was Reese Morgan. You know, Chris Eversley took almost 73 pointers. Chris O'Brien shot a lot from three. So I think it's going to be one of those things where, yeah, they'll shoot a lot of three pointers, but you're going to see a lot more. I think they're going to try to get the ball to the basket a lot more this year than they may have last year on positions where they may have settled for Dylan Royer coming off the screen and shooting a three-pointer, or Reese Morgan coming off the screen and shooting a three-pointer. I think they're going to be trying to work it more inside to Brian Bennett, or trying to get in the lob and drive the ball, or trying to let Jamal Johnson kind of create in the lane and get guys looks. I think you're going to see a lot less of those. Yeah. You know, they're down to 10 seconds on the shot clock. Let's run a quick play for Royer and see if he can get something from the perimeter.
Right.
So it's going to be kind of a sea change for them in terms of how they're going to find those points.
Right.
But at the same time, they have some strength in terms of being able to get the ball to the basket.
I really think when I look at this roster, I think that a few things have to break right for them, and I think a couple of those things are that Malik Love, when he sat out last year, you know, he was still walking around, and I imagine he could still practice shooting. And with a foot injury, all I could think of was Derek Fisher. And when Fisher got hurt in the Lakers' second championship run at the beginning of the last decade, he was out for a lot of the season and came back right before the playoffs. And I think he had just been shooting, and he was just lights out in the playoff run. He was making, you know, three-pointers when he wasn't really a threat before, and he came back.
Sure.
and he essentially made himself into that threat. I think
sure.
if either Malik Love or Jamal Johnson can even get close to, you know, if they can shoot 30% from 3-point range, you know, it's going to be a huge boon if they can have some games where they have two or three each, or, you know, they go one for three, one for four. But I think, you know, you're going to have end of shot clock situations for both of those guys, and you're going to have situations where the ball's in their hand. And when it's at the end of the game like that, or end of the shot clock like that, Calero likes to have it in his point guard's hand. And
sure.
It's going to be interesting. The other kind of X factor there, it's a guy I didn't mention, is Ridge Shipley, who may be kind of the 10th guy in that list of guys who I mentioned. And according to Joe Calero, can really get his own shot, is kind of a shorter, craftier point guard, maybe in the body type, if he lifts weights a lot over the course of his career, of somebody. I mean,
sure.
He's nowhere near Casper Ware, you know, right now, or maybe ever, but that's kind of what I think is in Joe Calero's mind when he recruited Ridge Shipley. And that's a kid who could potentially, you know, be in a situation like that, and you'd be really comfortable with him, you know, taking a three-pointer or getting to the rim too, to finish or whatever. And I
yeah.
think it's going to be interesting to see how much time he gets, whether a player like Taylor Sutliv actually redshirts. Markel Leonard, I think, is going to redshirt as a freshman. You know, there's just no time for those guys. And I think both of those guys could use some time getting a little bit bigger and stronger, and see where they go from there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I am interested to see kind of what he does with the three freshmen. And, the crazy thing, too, is that we've talked about the newcomers and kind of the guys coming back and Malik Love. And, you know, Brian Bennett's going to be, I think, they're really hoping he's going to make a big leap from his freshman to sophomore year. A lot of guys tend to do that, and so this will be kind of a big year for him. But really, honestly, when it comes down to it, I think a lot of the offense, and a lot of whether or not the offense, you know, gets better from last year or regresses from last year, that kind of thing, a lot of it's going to come down to Chris Eversley. And I really feel like Chris Eversley used a lot of possessions for Pauly last year. He was just outside the top 100, fairly high in the Big West in terms of the amount of shots he was taking. I don't necessarily know if it's going to be a great thing for him to be like in the top 10 and be one of those guys that is legitimately shooting the ball, you know, every other time down the court.
I agree.
But I do think that he's gonna see the bulk of it, and he's gotten better every year. If he can continue that progression, that's really going to help for Pauly. But I do think he's gonna kind of be the bellwether for them, and you know, if he can have a even better year this year than he did last year, that's going to be a big thing for their offense.
Yeah, so. I think it's interesting. I think with Eversley and you know, talk about a great kid, a really good player, first team Big West last year, preseason first team, big all Big West team as well. You know, if Cal Poly does something like win the regular season title, you know, he's probably the guy who's going to be the league MVP. That all being said, I really feel like Chris Eversley scoring 15 points a game for this team. I think the team might be at its best, and I could be wrong. I mean, I you know, the Royer points have to come from somewhere now, and maybe Waba and Bolden and Audister and Love and Johnson aren't going to pick those up. And so maybe Eversley maintains his points per game. But I think spreading around the offense more, I picture a play where he gets it on the left base, you know, the left block or short corner in the post, and everybody else kind of clears out at the beginning of the game a lot of the time. And I just don't feel like maybe that's Cal Poly's bread and butter. I think maybe that's what they go to at the end of a game when they want their best player to take a shot. But I think they're probably at their best when they're mixing in, you know, Bennett in the post, when they're mixing in pick and rolls with Johnson, and Eversley's at his best scoring when he's on the move. He's not at his best scoring standing, holding the ball. He's at his best scoring off of cuts and on the move and off of screens that he's set and in transition. And so it goes to what you were saying as far as the Cal Poly style being really interesting. I mean, they were one of the more efficient teams last year, I read, but their style, maybe it promotes maybe players like Johnson dominating the ball more and needing to get Eversley on the move even in the half court, which is, I think, going to be the challenge or continue to be the challenge offensively for them.
Sure. And I like you said, I think that's a style thing where I think if Eversley was on a team with a coach who wasn't as system oriented in terms of the offense, a lot of times I think on that team they would settle for, well, give the ball to Chris and let him try and make something happen.
Which isn't him at his best. It's not.
No, not by any chance stretches. I mean, I think he'd still be a good player, and like you said, in an end of the game situation, he's probably the one I'd want to touch the ball. But at the same time, I think, like you said, the thing that made Pauly's offense so great last year was not only was he good at what he did, but they had so many other options in that. And, you know, Joe Clare's team, they're never going to settle for a good shot. They want the best shot they can get in a possession.
Or they want to shoot it. I mean, they can get a three-pointer at any time, so they're not going to shoot that three-pointer with 5 seconds into the possession, generally, unless your name's Dylan Royer or Kyle Audister.
Yeah, they don't want kind of the contested three pointer. They don't want the 15-foot, two point shot. You know, that's half contested. They want to either get the ball to the rim or get a wide open look for one of their guys, and they're gonna grind you down until they can find that shot. And so that's gonna make the whole offense better. And I think like we were saying, if it's one of those things where 10, 15 games into the season, even if Chris Eversley's averaging 25 points a game, but he's taking half the shots in the team, that's not a good sign for Pauly.
Nope.
And so they need him to be that kind of Big West player of the year, but they also need a lot of other guys to step up and, be accountable offensively as well.
They need to be balanced. And I'd say, because of the style that they play, they need to be balanced. You know, like a team like UCSB, they're going to be really good, but Alan Williams is going to take 35% of their shots, 40% of their shots, probably.
Yeah,
another 25 or 30 are going to be, another 30 or 40% might be split between Bryson and Boswell, for instance. Those are going to be the three players that, are going to do the bulk of the scoring for a team like UCSB, or for instance, Davis with Hawkins and Sipkins. Those are kind of, that's how that team has to play if they're going to be good. For Cal Poly, it's kind of the opposite. They kind of have to have a balanced attack. They have to have lots of guys chipping in, and maybe guys find a role that they are scoring, 12 or something points a game. I mean, Bolden and Waba, you just don't know because you haven't seen them play. But it's just kind of an interesting dynamic that is a little bit different there. And it is because of the defensive style. It is because they grind a little bit, and it is because they grind offensively too. And guys have to understand, that maybe they'll, they'll score one day and not score another day quite as much. I think as Otister has good shooting games, Cal Poly's going to score in the 60s and 70s. As Otister has not good shooting games, Cal Poly's going to score in the 50s and 60s. I think they just don't have the balance that they had last year between Royer, Otister, and Reese Morgan. I think Otister is just going to have to be, you know, lights out from behind the arc, and he is going to get a lot of those kinds of possessions. I think he's another candidate to be handling the ball in late shot clock situations, even if Jamal Johnson is on the floor. If you run Otister on a screen and roll, they got to trail hard, right? Or they got to hedge out on him versus Jamal, where they can maybe go under. At least that's how he played last year, or that's how he shot last year.
That makes sense. And it was weird that it was kind of one of the weird things last year was that Pauly actually, and we kind of talked about this earlier, Pauly actually seemed to do better in games where they shot better from three-point range than they did from two-point range. And I think this year's team is probably going to be the opposite. If Pauly's shooting better or taking more shots from three-point range than they are from two-point range, that's going to be a bad sign. And so
yeah, that's going to be interesting. Like things to look for. So that's one thing to look for. What are other things to look for that fans can maybe look at a stat sheet at halftime and say, we're in trouble, or wow, we really got away with one there because X, Y, and Z happened. And if that doesn't change, we're probably going to lose, or vice versa. What are some like easy tips? Like for football, I always look at things like obviously turnovers, but also are they running it to the fullback is one of my big things. Are they handing it to Brandon Howe and Akinyene Umo and even Matt Rulon? I think, you know, when there's about a third of the total rushes, or if they're getting, you know, 15 or 20 rushes to that group of guys, they're actually a lot more successful. I think that's my hypothesis, and I looked at it.
Yeah, no, right. That makes sense.
And so what are some things like that you can look at in a basketball stat sheet and say, well, they're just not doing X, Y, and Z, and that's why they're not winning, or, hey, this is a big reason why?
Well, we talk a lot with basketball. There's kind of this concept called the four factors, which are like the four things that you can kind of look at from each team that kind of make up each team's offensive profile, and then obviously on the other end their defensive profile, however they're giving it to their opponent.
Right.
And that's shooting percentage. We like to look, you know, Dorf like to look at effective field goal percentage, but essentially you're just talking about, you know, how well the team's shooting both from two-point range or from three-point range. Turnovers, you know, how often they're turning the ball over. Our dorky stat would be turnover percentage, how many turnovers they're, you know, turnovers divided by how many possessions the game has. And then offensive rebound percentage, which it kills me. I hate, you watch TV and you see them talk about rebound margin. Don't listen to a single word of it, because rebound margin doesn't tell you anything. It doesn't matter if one team has more rebounds than the other team, but that usually tells you is that the team that has more rebounds is the team that's turning the ball over more because they're not shooting as much. So the other team doesn't have as much of a chance to rebound the ball.
Right.
So the big thing we like that dorks like me like to look at is, how many rebounds is a team getting as a percentage of total available rebounds? So, if you know, how many times am I grabbing an offensive rebound and the defense isn't grabbing that rebound? You know, you like to see maybe like one in three. If I'm getting one offensive rebound for every two defensive rebounds the other team's getting, that's kind of a big deal. And then finally with free throws, how often is my team getting to the free throw line? How often are they drawing fouls from the other team? Usually, honestly, it's really simple. Dorky people, like, we just usually like to look at field goals attempted divided by how many field or free throws attempted divided by how many field goals the team has attempted. It just kind of gives you a good ratio for, you know, how often they're getting to the line as opposed to how often they're shooting.
And what's like an average there? Give me some context on that one, because that one, like,
so for that,
yeah, what's like a,
that you're kind of looking again at about 33%. If you're shooting one free throw for every two, you know, field goals that you're attempting, or, you know, for every three, then you're doing pretty decently. Pauly actually last year was right at 33%. The NCAA average was about 36%. But that's, you know, if you're in that kind of one out of three range, you're doing okay. If you're in closer to one out of two, you're doing really well. If you're closer to one out of four, you're not getting to the line as much.
So that's like one out of every. So given like things like offensive rebounds, but then also turnovers. That's about one out of every six or seven possessions that you're getting to the line. Is that kind of fair?
Yeah, I'd say so. So what you're looking, you know, if a team, a lot of times you'll see, you know, in a typical college basketball game, a team will shoot the ball, say, 60 times. You would hope that if that's your team, that they're getting to the line about, that they're shooting about 20 free throws.
Got it.
If they're shooting 50, you know, if they have 50 field goal attempts, you're hoping that they have, you know, 15, 16 free throws.
So then you're talking maybe like one out of every 8 to 10 possessions, depending on turnovers.
Yeah, and, essentially. Yeah. Essentially, that you're getting to the line, essentially.
Okay. Right.
So, and then, yeah, off at the rebounds, you know, one out of every three, so about 33%. And then turnovers, you would like it to be one out of every five, about 20%.
Does
Tom Pauly was great last year. They they only turned the ball over on 16% of their possessions. But the NCAA average is about 20%, so one out of every five possessions. So, again, in a typical college basketball game, that's 60, 65 possessions, you're hoping for, you know, no more than 12 turnovers or so.
Got it. Very good.
For this team specifically, I'd say you're probably going to want to look at that free throw stat, how often they're getting to the line, because, again, if they're going to shoot less from the perimeter, if they're going to try and get the ball inside more, hopefully they're going to get to the line more. Like I said, Cal Poly was about 33.3% last year, which was a little less than national average. You hope that would get a little bit closer to the 36-37%.
Right.
And then on defense, Poly gave up, from two-point range, they gave up 52.2% shooting, which was really poor, 310th in the country. Again, like we talked about with that, hopefully improve athleticism on defense. You're going to want to see that number below 50%, hopefully, for the defense to be pretty well. That means they're challenging shots that are closer to the rim, maybe blocking some more shots.
Yeah.
Those are kind of the two things that look for this team.
Well, and you don't want them to be like a team that sits there and shoots contested 17-footers or something like that. If you're going to take two-pointers, the contested 17, 18 footer is the worst shot in basketball, right?
One that Paulie wants to kind of force. They want to see a lot less of those layups and attempts near the hoop.
Right. So. And they're the ones that they want to get offensively, obviously. And it's not, you know, it's a little bit harder than just saying that, right? There's a lot of strategy involved, but if you're a stat geek or somebody who likes to look at stats, that's something that you can look at the end of the game and say, wow, you know, Cal Poly played really good defense and the other team just made shots. I think Fresno State did that against them in the one game they lost at Mott last year. Where they just made shots. I mean, I remember after the game, Calero wasn't disappointed with the way that those guys played. He just said they made shots. Speaking of Fresno State, you're going to be over at the game at Fresno State against Cal Poly?
I'm hoping to get up there to watch that game.
Yeah.
It's on the 20th of November, on Wednesday night. So it's kind of a, about, I don't know, 2 hours from beautiful Bakersfield.
Is it really? Is it really like, I mean, because it's just a little bit more than 2 hours from here. So that's kind of crazy to me.
If you kind of drive like an idiot like I do, you can probably make it about an hour 45. It's a nice arena that they have up there in Fresno. I was there 2 years ago to watch the game, watch Cal Poly win against Fresno 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping to get a chance to make it up there and maybe get a chance to make it over to Mott for a few games as well. So.
Okay, very good, very good. And are you coming over for homecoming this week?
You know what? Unfortunately, I am not. We have some stuff going on at work. We have a big hockey game this weekend in Bakersfield. I know we talked about
the Condors are playing
this weekend. If you go to Deadspin or your favorite sports site of choice, they are playing this weekend in, I believe it's this weekend, it might be later on in the year, but they're playing in Gettysburg Address jerseys.
Oh yeah.
Which are really patriotic is the best word I can think of this guy.
I actually saw those this morning and I didn't realize that was the Condors that did that. And like you said, we've talked about this before. I used to work I interned when I was in college for the San Diego Gulls, who are now disbanded, I believe, but who were in the same division as the Condors and the Fresno Falcons and Anchorage Aces and Long Beach Ice Dogs. I think that was pretty much the conference.
Yeah. Good time minor league hockey. It's good stuff. So, yeah, we have a big Condors 2-bill this weekend with a Saturday and Sunday game. So, unfortunately, I will not be able to make it to homecoming, but I'll be following closely for sure.
Very good. Last question. What are you predicting this year, you know, in the Big West? I mean, I'm a fan, so, but I try to make like a reasonable prediction. What are you thinking would be like a good finish in the Big West? Is this the point now where Cal Poly in the next couple of years, and Luke always asks this question and he's an alum, are they at the point now where it's like, let's get excited when they win the Big West Conference tournament or finish first place in the conference? I mean, those are two things that they haven't done. First place in the regular season, I mean, those are two things that they haven't done either in a long time or ever.
Yeah, sure thing. Absolutely, yeah. No, I think this is a great year for them. You know, obviously, there's not really a favorite in the conference. There's some teams that are that, you know, people are thinking are going to be close. I think Pauly's one of those. But this would be a year where I could see Pauly contending for the conference title. I do think it's a year where the team that wins the conference might have 5 losses, might even have 6 losses.
Yeah,
could be 2, 3, even 4 teams that finish atop the conference. It's gonna be a real tight year. You know, aside from teams, you know, Riverside's probably not gonna be very good. Fullerton, with their coaching change and some of the guys that they lost, they're probably going to be towards the bottom. But after that, I mean, there's really a lot of teams that could be, you know, in the hunt. And
yeah.
So I think, you know, Irvine and Pauly and Santa Barbara and Long Beach are kind of the front runners right now. But, you know, I'd still take the field over those 4 teams.
Really?
Really?
For the conference tournament championship or the... Oh, you mean against any of those teams individually?
I wouldn't be surprised if maybe the team that wins the conference or even finishes tied for the lead in the conference, if it's not one of those 4 teams. I wouldn't be surprised if it were, say, Hawaii or right. Norfolk.
Right.
But I think it's one of those things where... you know, it's going to be wide open. Obviously, the tournament's going to be fun, but it's just not going to be one of those years like we had a couple of years ago at Long Beach, where you know they're going to go 15-1. A team's going to go 15-1 and just blow out every other team. You know,
Beach has won 43 conference games in the last 3 years, which is pretty ridiculous in the regular season. Now it hasn't transferred 2 of those years. UCSB won the conference tournament, and then last year Pacific.
Sure.
Which is why I said, and my like regular season rankings, I think I put Long Beach, UCSB, Cal Poly, Irvine, and Hawaii in the Northridge. I think that was my order. Spoiler alert for my preview. but I also said that any of the, you know, top 5, maybe even like you said, Northridge, I could see, you know, one of those teams making a run in the Big West tournament. And it wouldn't surprise me one bit either. I think it's going to be a really fun conference season. And I think, you know, there were 4 teams last year that won all their games at home, and I wouldn't be surprised if there were no teams that that did that this year. I mean, I know there's a lot of good home court advantages, but you know, things come back to the mean, and so it's really hard to do something like that every year. But I think when you look top to bottom, teams that don't really have a huge like weakness, for instance, I think Cal Poly's one of the more solid ones. I really do. And I think, I think I'm most confident in them finishing somewhere between 2nd and 4th or 1st and 4th. I might be more confident in them doing that than any other team. Real quick, Irvine is ridiculously huge.
They've got that huge 7'5" guy.
7'6".
Yeah. Which, I mean, that's amazing. And Will Davis is obviously a beast, but
yeah.
What I'd be interested to see with them is that, you know, Russell Turner, since the day he got, you know, took over at Irvine, he really wanted them to play fast. He really wanted them to get up and down the court. They haven't done it as much. And I can't imagine that a 7'5", 7'6" guy is going to be able to get up and down the court a lot.
Yeah.
But they're going to be, it might be one of those things where they end up being a very good defensive team. And Pauly or another team is a really good offensive team. And it's just, you know, who's going to, you know, who can win that battle.
Well, yeah.
But, and, yeah, Irvine,
a team like Irvine, who's really tall, or Hawaii, who's really tall, seem like kryptonite for Cal Poly, who may or may not be able to make a lot of outside shots this year. You know, unlike the last couple of years. Again, the loss of Morgan, I think, just really hurts in terms of that that other guy. And like I said, if Johnson and Love can shoot like a combined 30%, maybe that's the answer. Maybe Eversley steps out more and Awich plays more four and Eversley plays three, or vice versa. You know, kind of giving them more length, and cause Chris can shoot threes a little bit, as well.
Sure.
But I think this conference is just going to be really interesting. Northridge is super skilled offensively. I think they had like three guys who scored 14 points last year, even though their team wasn't very good. Reggie Theus's cupboard isn't bare. I think, like you said, Fullerton's probably not going to be great. Riverside's probably not going to be great, but even those teams have talent to beat somebody. So, it's going to be a really fun basketball season. Of course, Cal Poly kicks off, on Friday against, or at Arizona at the McHale Center, and plays three Pac-12 schools. They play at Pitt this year, at Delaware. They play at Fresno State and at Stanford are two away games that I'm going to try to make it to try to check out the team as they're away. They have a couple of decent home games, I think, in non-conference play. I think the best one's probably going to be Nevada, but they're going to be high flying. And Calero said it was his most athletic team, so I'm looking forward to it. And we'll try to catch back up with you and see if there are any things that are standing out, maybe as the non-conference schedule winds down and the conference schedule looms, when it comes to either the Big West or the Cal Poly team. Nick Wynn, Musty, I appreciate it.
That's your thing.
And,
thanks, Ben.
And yeah, absolutely, anytime, and I hope to talk to you again soon. Hey, everybody, thanks for listening to the fansmanship.com podcasts. For more news, information, and podcasts, you can visit www.fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Streetlights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up. Front page of the news.